Hello listeners, will you allow me a minute to tell you about Past Test? If you haven't used them yet, you should. They are a fantastic online resource with hundreds of questions and answers covering multiple medical exams, including the MRCS, MRCP and medical finals. I've used them lots and found the resource so useful, particularly the past papers for these exams. As a listener to the podcast, you lucky people get 15% off some of these subscriptions. So don't wait around. I mean, do until the end of the episode, but then go and get your access. Links and codes will be in the show notes. Who will a dim bone, dim bone, dim
drive on? Welcome to MRCS on the Move. Bowels, bones, and backseat vibers. I'm your host, Naomi, but this is the podcast where you do the talking.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode. I don't really need to make any introductions this week as we are going straight back in with Annalise and finishing off our primary survey. We did A and B in super good detail, so we're going straight on to C, D and E. Not ideal that it's broken up, I appreciate that, but I prefer to have a shorter episode. So, with no further ado, we'll go straight back into where we were with Annalise. Hope you enjoy, guys. Thanks. Okay, so we're going to move on to C. Uh-huh. How are you doing, Dominic? Are you okay?
Dominic's kind of going, what is she doing? He's seven. Yes, we're moving on to C.
Moving on to C. So, what are we assessing in C? And what are we going to send off, simply?
So C is for circulation. And so what you're assessing is whether or not the person in front of you is in shock, and what you need to do about it. So in trauma, in blunt trauma, it's harder to work out the cause of shock than in penetrating because there's so many different things. But basically in trauma, the cause of shock will be hemorrhagic most of the time, then tension, pneumothorax, then tamponade, then fine print. If it's penetrating trauma, the shock will be from wherever the hole is. And so the question you're trying to answer when you assess circulation is the person in shock or not, and what do I need to do about it? And where's the bleeding coming from? And the management is going to be simultaneous assessment and resuscitation. If they are in shock, you need to replace their blood and stop the bleeding simultaneously. To answer your question about what you need to get, what you're saying there is when you're assessing it, you're starting with, again, look at the patient. So people who are in shock look like crap. You're going to check their heart rate and their blood pressure. You're going to remember that you can lose 30% of your circulating blood volume before your systolic blood pressure will drop. That's because you have something called vasoconstriction happening, and that vasoconstriction is what's going to narrow your pulse pressure because your diastolic pressure will increase. Mm. And so you're going to assess the heart rate and blood pressure, but if they're in shock and they're trying really hard to clamp down on their peripheral resistance, they will feel cool, they'll feel clammy, sweaty, pale, look rubbish, and then you're going to be, so you've gone, yes, I've just answered my question, they're in shock. And then the second part of circulation assessment is, where's the blood? Because it's most of the time bleeding.
I'm going to ask the audience a question before we tell them where we look for. But what are the major areas we look for hemorrhage from? If we've established they're in shock, where do we then go? Where do I need to check?
Patient with blunt trauma, classical teaching is that the places you can bleed from so much to be in shock are foreign on the floor, so chest, abdomen, pelvis, long bones, and in a penetrating trauma, where you're going to be bleeding from is where the holes are. So you need to work out where the holes
are. Simple. Okay. So this patient, I was really going to enjoy asking this question, mainly because I can't remember the answer that you used to give me. But an ABG, I probably should remember the answer, but your ABG comes back and waves it at you.
this a base access question?
Yes.
This is a base access question.
It is the base access
question. You mentioned something. That's good.
Well, no, I can't remember why, though. But anyway, so your ABG comes back and your HB is 125. Okay. And your SHO is like, oh, Mrs. Coco, this is really good. It's fine. And you're like, I'm going to tell you different. So is this reassuring that there's no acute active bleeding? And if not, what do we look at and why?
So I remember teaching this in the Royal Melbourne with Naomi. And the way I would explain this is, Naomi, if you get sick of listening to be on this podcast and you somehow manage to open up a time space portal, appear in my living room in Sydney and stab me in the face, am I going to bleed whole blood or plasma?
Whole blood.
You're going to bleed whole blood, right? And so it's the concentration after I've bled a litre or two on the floor of haemoglobin in what remains of my circulating blood volume going to be the same or different to what it was before you stabbed me?
The same.
It's going to be the same because I bled whole blood. Haemoglobin concentration is not going to change acutely because you're bleeding whole blood, right?
Yeah.
So the answer is not reassuring at all. If it's already low, that's bad. But a normal haemoglobin doesn't mean anything. What is helpful and the single predictor in terms of blood tests that helps you know if someone is shocked is the base excess. The reason is this. If someone is shocked, a person is shocked, then their body has excellent mechanisms to try and deal with that. All right?
Yeah.
And one of those mechanisms is going to involve anaerobic metabolism. Byproduct, which is acid creation in very basic terms, yeah? And that means you'll have an excess of base. So if your base excess, sorry, it's the other way around, you've got an excess of acid. So if your base excess is worse than -2, that means that there's a whole lot of anaerobic metabolism going on because the cells are getting stuck. They're ischemic. But the definition of shock is end organ ischemia. That's why base excess is important, is because it is a marker for end organ ischemia.
Sorry. Just let her outside.
Sam is having a with her dog.
Yeah, just had to let her outside. Great.
So does that make sense? So if you're shutting down systems, right, so shock is end organ ischemia, right?
Yeah.
If end organs are not getting oxygenated blood, then they will use anaerobic metabolism. And so then you'll have an excess of acid,
yeah,
which is a negative base excess, right? So if your base excess is worse than -2, that means that you've got anaerobic metabolism happening in a trauma patient who's in shock. You can assume that's because of shock, probably secondary to blood loss. Yeah. Remembering tension and tampina as other relatively frequent causes.
Yeah. That does make a lot
but
of sense.
But you've got that base excess. See, you're fine.
I think I've stood in A&E before and been like, it's something about the base excess. And someone's gone, oh, their haemoglobin's fine. And I've been like, no.
No, she told me it wasn't.
Yeah. Someone just told me one day it wasn't. Okay.
That's why. You don't bleed plasma, you bleed everything. That's like saying, I have a litre of lemonade, I've just spilt 250 mL on the floor, so the remaining 750 mL has a different chemical composition. You're like, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
So even my son just said that was making any sense, and he's seven.
Oh, now I feel silly. Okay, so we're going to give him some blood. We give him some O negative blood. He's getting that.
And you get where the bleeding's coming from, aren't we?
Yeah, we're going to establish where the bleeding's coming from. I'm tempted to hesitate on there because, well, let's say it came from the chest. We're like, okay, it came from the chest. We think that's where he was bleeding.
Well, then you put a chest drain in, so you're going to be looking at how much came out,
yeah,
and how quickly, and whether he's improving or deteriorating.
Yeah, so he's improving. He's improving. We're gonna
wonderful.
Yeah,
buy my cappuccino.
You can have a cup. Oh, yeah, the cup of tea is very cold.
Yeah, the kettle.
Okay, so we're moving on to D. Okay, we're nearly there. Last two, I'm going to imagine, will be quicker. Annalise will probably disagree.
So the D is E, all right? You're assessing someone's mentation. And the reason why it comes behind A, B, and C is because if you do not have a patent airway and you are not oxygenating your blood, you will not be mentating. And so D is just, I mean, I don't know why the word is disability. That's a bit stupid. It's your neurological status, right? Yeah. You won't have a functioning brain without an airway, oxygen, and blood. That's why. And so to assess D, it's really simple. You need to talk to someone. I mean, if you don't know the components of a GCS, you at least will know if they're alert, verbalizing, only responding to pain or unresponsive.
Yeah. Right?
You will check their glucose because, as we all know, every good patient deserves glucose. That's a bit too much like the piano way to remember which keys are which in the piano now that I think about it. That's unrelated. And you'll see if there are any lateralizing signs. And that's it for the primary survey because those are the life threats sorted. Yeah. And honestly, there's not a lot you're going to be able to do in the primary survey to improve D apart from look after A, B, and C.
Yeah.
The reason for that is because if someone has a head injury, they've already had the primary injury, right? That was the bit where the head hit the ground after he fell off his motorbike. And your whole job is to prevent secondary brain injury, which is what happens if you do not deliver oxygenated blood to that brain.
Yeah.
That's your D.
I'm assuming in that you want to check, and a bit with lateralizing sign, you want to check the pupils is an important thing.
Actually, so you're looking at the pupils because that's like, again, someone usually has a pen torch. So have a quick look and say they're either equal and reactive or they're not. And don't forget that you need to go back and check that again. So in any of this, if there's a problem, if something changes, go back to A and start on the alphabet again.
So exposure. What is involved in exposure within a trauma setting?
See, this is my other favorite rant. This is exposure and environment. So it's not only looking at the whole patient for injuries. It's particularly important for penetrating trauma because it's very easy to miss something on the back if someone's been stabbed in the back. But for blunt as well, maintaining spinal protection when you're doing it. But it's also environment, which means you need to check the temperature. And the reason why you need to check the temperature is that trauma patients, if you make them hypothermic, then you have added to their pre-existing potential traumatic coagulopathy that they have from being majorly injured, and you screw them over by making them cold, and that's bad for clotting, that's bad for acid-base status, that's bad for everything. So check their temperature, and if they're cold, do something about it. And it's always missed. Actually, up to the point at the Royal Melbourne where I'd walk into a trauma call and someone would say, we haven't checked the temperature yet, but we're getting there at least.
I can totally imagine that. You know, I can do it.
Yeah, it was awesome. I'd be like, thanks, Leah. Oh, she was great. But that's why.
Yeah.
Okay. Things don't work properly if you're cold. So check the temperature and do something about it.
Yeah.
And again, my son's playing, it makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense, doesn't it? Get a blanket.
Yeah, get a blanket, you know, take off cold clothes. If you're going to give fluid,
but
it's not rocket science. Trauma is really simple.
I think you just froze there, so I'm assuming you said give warm fluids.
Yes, give warm fluid.
You froze just as you were going to say that. Great. Well, I think, so obviously I'm going to say we finish, but then we know we've got to go back and reassess, haven't we? We've always got to be reassessing throughout our primary survey.
And that's what I was saying before. If something goes wrong, go back to the start. Because the reason why it's in that order is because that would generally kill you the fastest.
Yeah.
It's easy. There's an alphabet. Go through the alphabet.
And think don't about stress. So here's some more letters of the alphabet. They're not in the right order. But last question is, what does ample stand for?
Oh, this. So it is a bit weird because in medical school we're always taught to take the history before the examination, but in trauma we're trying to make the patient not die. So an ample history stands for A. A is for allergies, M is for medications, P is for past medical history, L is for last eight, and E is the events leading up to the
crime. Yeah.
And again, it's just one of those things where it's everyone does the same way, so everyone knows what else they're talking about. So when you said things like, I've taken an ample history, someone's like, oh, so that means you asked enough questions? You're like, that would make sense as well, but no.
Yeah. Great. Okay, cool. So I think we've covered a lot of primary survey there. I'm pretty happy with that. Thank you so much, Annalise and Dominic. That was great.
And Dominic, yeah, thank you, Dominic, for helping.
Sorry.
No, it was really great. The only thing I would just want to say to everybody, if that's all right,
yeah,
is it's really important to keep looking at the whole patient in trauma. So I know, for example, Naomi is a urology.
Yeah.
Trainee, there will be orthopedic trainees, you know, throat trainees, but the patient didn't get a memo saying that they're only allowed to have one system injury.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you are looking at someone who has a traumatic injury, please use a primary and secondary survey and check out the whole patient because they're a person, not an organ system.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I remember in my trauma job, you do just feel like you're a coordinator of every other team because you are just involving neuro, plastics, ortho, whatever. So you, I guess that comes to that point, doesn't it? They can have problems with so many different things.
Yeah.
And part of being a trauma doctor.
Looking at their own little bit, no one looks at the whole patient and that's bad. So don't do that.
Yeah. Fabulous. Well, I hope you've all enjoyed that. I definitely did. And we'll see you again soon.
She has to say that.